Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a December 16, 2008 segment from the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum. With us today is the Technical Director for PTI Incorporated, Pre-Combustion Technology Incorporated, and that would be Bob Pochin. Bob, are you with us?
Yes, good morning, sir.
Well, welcome to the program.
How are you doing?
Doing just fine, and you?
Very good, and Bob Boyce is here with me as well.
Oh, very good. Excellent.
Hello, James.
How you doing, Bob? Well, we have snow on the ground up here in Kentucky. I guess you guys are a little more comfortable down there in the Orlando area, huh?
Well, just a tad bit. I think it was a brisk 75 this morning.
Yeah, we had an ice storm come through. Not quite as severe as what the extreme northeast received this past week, where over a million people were without power, and some of them, I suppose, still are. But
That's a true shame, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is, and that's one of the reasons why this program is in existence, because the shame of obsolete energy technology, it's been with us for decades, and every year that passes and we become more advanced, even our children are playing with gadgets that are more advanced than what we have access to when it comes to energy. And so we'd like to know exactly what is, pardon me, pre-combustion technology up to help mankind with the energy crisis. Not necessarily a shortage of energy as much as the fact that we're just using polluting sources of energy and we're paying a lot for it. Exactly what is your company doing?
Well, we're the first manufacturer, true manufacturer, to do high volume in using Bob Boyce's series cell design to get them out there. That's the short and the long of it. The explanation of that a little bit further is we've taken all of the issues that were presented to us a couple of years ago, and as a manufacturer, our goal was to solve the problems. That's what we do for our other customers. We manufacture hot melt equipment and other high-tech CNC-style pieces of robotics or whatever you want to call it. And this problem was presented to us because our president, Alice Poach, and my wife, wanted to issue a green statement via equipment. And so once she saw this and she said, maybe we ought to do something with this. What can you do, sweetheart? And, well, that was then my initiative to get going on it.
And you know something? It would seem that the women of the world could have a major impact in inspiring their husbands and so on to
I agree.
To get on this page, you know?
I can assure you that mine has a great impact on me. So she did, and she ended up pushing it, and as things would have it, I got lucky and met up with Bob Boyce, who then came down and visited and does what he normally does, and shares all of his information just as liberally as he possibly could. And we shared with him what our thoughts were on it. He guided us in, you don't want to do that because, and then we put into our part of the pot our expertise on how to do manufacturing of certain components. We have two other partners with us that are in Texas and one up in Pennsylvania that have expertise in both metals and the particular products that we have incorporated into this cell. And we combined all that knowledge together and within this short period of time came up with a solution. And the solution is, as Bob would call it, boosting and or just producing large quantities of the hydroxy gas. Not steam, not carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, simply and eloquently carbon or hydroxy gas.
Yes, which is the two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen that is a result of the decomposition of water.
Exactly.
And when you said in passing the cell, you were actually referring to your trademark brand name of your electrolytic device, which you call the cell, right?
Yes, sir. And the irony of that is during that two-year period that we've been working on this, the comment was, well, what are we going to call the thing? What are you going to call the cell? What is that? And pretty soon, well, going out to the cell and go to the lab and pick up that cell, or pick up the cell. And we finally figured out, wait a minute, we're calling it the cell. So the wife who has the final vote said, you know what, it's going to be called the cell.
So, well, why not?
Yeah, everyone, well, you're looking at the cells, right? Yeah, okay.
Well, Stanmeyer called his the water fuel cell, but that causes people to become confused with a fuel cell, which is completely different in its operation.
Yeah, yeah. And since ours, the only drawback we had on naming it the cell was it had to be the cell.cc for the website because the .com had been taken. So
by some biologist.
Yeah.
Probably.
So yeah, unfortunately, we ended up with all the others except for .com and .com. I think it's org, but it's a .cc.
Yeah, well, I noticed when I typed in a Google search for the cell, a bunch of biology pages came up.
Oh, my. I mean to tell you. Well,
you are a little bit hard to find because of that.
We are, and we truly apologize. But if you type in the parent company, Premelters, I guarantee we're easy to find.
So that's where the parent company, in its background in the hot melt industrial applications.
In the manufacturing, yes, sir. In being able to integrate systems integration, and have been at that 15 years very successfully, and thankfully so, because that was the mechanism that allowed us to spend more dollars than I'm going to admit to on the radio because my wife might be listening in the development of this.
Well, it's a very wonderful altruistic contribution that you've made to perfecting this technology.
Well, don't get me wrong now, and I want to make sure I clarify that. We will make a small profit on each one of these. But as you and I have discussed prior and before, and I discussed this with Bob, fortunately or unfortunately in this loving world of ours, that's what it takes in order to get something out there because we are up against significant opposition to it. And everyone's looking at advertising and or quality of this and quality of that. So it takes a profit in a business to be able to reinvest it. And that's exactly what we're doing is reinvesting it back into the business in massive ways so that our production levels can grow from the 4,000 a month up to the 25,000. And then hopefully within the six-month period, we've scheduled it for about 250,000 per month.
So there is a bit of a malconceived mindset on the part of some in the alternative energy community, and what is referred to as the open source community, I suppose. Pardon me. And that is that somehow it's not real clear what giving a technology away really is. And as you're pointing out, it takes money to produce something.
Unfortunately, you are correct. And one other point that I really want to bring up, and I think I mentioned this before, we have four individual patents in addition to this. However, those patents are limited to 1 year. So this is not going to be one of those, we're going to lock it up for 17 years. You know, like we do, we have a dozen other patents on our other equipment. And for those, yes, of course. But for this, we have 1 year. And candidly, at the end of that year, if anybody wants to put up with the manufacturing technique that we have, God bless them, because it is complex. But it does work, and it works exceptionally well.
And exactly what is the nuance of that process?
Well, we have developed a way to be able to isolate as best as possible in a series cell the leakages between cells. And that by itself was a challenge. So that at the same time, in the one mechanism that we have to manufacture it, and by the way, that one's not open discussion yet, the one mechanism that we have to keep the spacing right on the money and in position also at the same time seals the cells to such a degree or seals the plates to such a degree that there is little to no leakage on the sides. Let me rephrase that. Little to none at all on the sides. And through the flow-through mechanism, there is nominal at best, certainly acceptable. And because what it gains us in benefit, if you think about it, what are some of the issues in the series cell? You have the sludge factor, or as I've heard it, and please excuse my ignorance, the red mud or something of that nature. I've heard it discussed on your show before. How do we change the solutions? How do we add more fluid to the cell? And how do you maintenance this? Remember, now we have people that, at best, they'd rather not open their hood, and at worst, they never open their hood of a vehicle. So we've got to treat it like it's going to be, you need to add windshield washer fluid to your reservoir. If it's any more complex than that, God bless them, because that's all they're going to have. That'll be it. So we treated it as such, and we designed it so that the system incorporated, besides the isolation of each one of the individual cells and the sealing of it to such a degree that it's not coming apart, that we had a flow-through mechanism that is pumped, and that keeps motion going through the cell. So there is no stagnation. There is no buildups, there are no buildups. And at the same time, in that process, we were able to achieve something new, which is, if you understand this, when you form a bubble of hydrogen or oxygen on the plate, as an example, let's say it forms at 1 inch. Under normal atmospheric pressure. What we've done is we've taken, and by having fluid dynamics compress it, because we're able to get a slight pressure internal of the cell from the fluid, and this is only an example, so I don't want all the physicists out there going, wait a minute, that's not the correct number. But we compress it down so that it's 1/4 the size. So now that 1-inch diameter bubble is a 1/4 inch in size, internal in the cell, and that allows that much more space for other electrolysis to occur. So theoretically, you're at 4 times the efficiency.
Very interesting.
Or roughly. I mean, it's not exact.
Not efficiency, but fluid dynamics of the gas.
Yeah, as Bob has pointed out, the fluid dynamics of the gas are. See, that's why I have him. He understands it a lot better than I do.
As we understand, we don't want to have a lot of back pressure on the cells, because we don't want to increase current demand to drive that back pressure. So this is done in a way that it doesn't really bring up the back pressure resistance to production, but it's enough that it reduces the bubble size at the points where it would normally occlude, up at the top of the cells, so that the fluid can carry the bubbles away, and then once they're out of that higher dynamic pressure range and they come out through the patented section of the cell and exit into the common ducted area and are conveyed to the tank, then the pressure is not there and the bubbles can go ahead and expand and join and become larger.
So basically what you have, James, is as soon as the gas and the liquid exit that area of the cell, it's back to its normal size and or volume. And voila, when you go to measure it, that volume is what you're looking for.
Very good. Well, it's an excellent idea.
I'm sure you remember our discussions in the past where I mentioned the maximum production on the series cell was limited to 0.5 liter per minute per cell before you start blowing the electrolyte out of the cells.
Right.
This solves that issue because we can now generate more than 1 liter per minute per cell without having that issue.
And the YouTube video that you posted recently shows the discharge hose coming from the cell violently shaking from the large volume of gas that's being forced through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's an evidence of the fact that you are producing much more per cell than what was previously done?
We actually ran into a limit there. Our tank that we use as the liquid gas separator is actually too small, and our bubbler is too small for the kind of flow rates that we can achieve with these units. It's appropriately sized for the smaller unit for the light truck industry and vans and such like that, the TC1200-6 models. Those are appropriately sized for that container, but the large unit that we did on the second video, that container is actually about a quarter of the size it needs to be.
And what is the liters per minute difference on the two units there?
Yeah.
Roughly about 10 liters per minute. We get, depending on which cell you're talking about, and you obviously go to the website and pull it down, but we get anywhere from a minimum of 4 liters a minute on our small cell, that just to start with, at nominal, at best amperage, to, if you really want to push that small cell, we have it at 14 liters per minute. Just absolutely no question about it.
Yeah, we've actually taken it higher than that, but not recommended the amount of production level. As you go up in production, your efficiency drops, pretty substantially. And that's only because you're having to push so much at it, and you're losing surface area when you're pushing that much through such a small cell because there's so much gas being generated.
And Bob is such a taskmaster for me to efficiency, and me, I just want to get the gas out. So.
Yeah, that's been always a contention point in that he just wants to see maximum gas, and you know me, I like efficiency. So
yeah, it really depends on the application. Like
the
interview I did Sunday with the fellow who first manufactured a water welder, he said that efficiency had nothing to do with what they were up to. All
right.
He wanted to do was be able to plug a cord into the, into the wall and have a small pencil tip hydroxy flame come out the other end.
Right. Well, that when you're running a welder off of essentially unlimited power, which is the grid, when you're plugging into the wall, that's not an issue. But when you're trying to produce that power from the generator that's being driven, generator or alternator on the engine that you want to try to boost, then the power becomes a critical factor, because if your power efficiency isn't high enough, then the drag caused by the alternator cannot make up for the increase in efficiency you get from the combustion of the extra combustion efficiency. So there is a point at which, and this is where most of the boosters on the market fail to hit the mark. They we've seen some really, really crap, out there where they use just two electrodes, for instance, and generate a little bit of hydroxy gas and a whole lot of water vapor and steam. And water vapor in and of itself isn't a bad thing, as long as it's in moderation. But steam is not any good, because steam doesn't compress or doesn't expand anymore. You get no phase change from it. It's already expanded. And whereas water vapor, the flash of combustion will flash the steam and give you some phase change. But too much water vapor and not enough hydroxy, you're totally negating the whole purpose of the hydroxy gas. You need enough of it there to actually increase the combustion efficiency if you expect to double your fuel economy or better. And that's what we're looking at. We're looking at realistic figures of vehicles that we can provide enough hydroxy gas to actually achieve those kind of improvements.
So another reason for being
and James, if you're still there, hopefully. If not, it sounds like your phone just died.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Oh yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. If we're talking about heating a home with hydroxy gas produced by grid electric, then we would also be concerned that it be as efficient a process as possible.
Right, in order to save the customer's money on their electric bill.
So they're able to disconnect their natural gas, and even though they're paying the electric company, they're still saving money.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and we've had test systems like that up in Pennsylvania, where and it's still in the process of working through. And as we talked yesterday, I have to get all of Bob's memos. Somehow I miss all these details. God, if I could only get a tenth of his knowledge. But one of the challenges was the slowing down of the flashpoint for one of the larger vendors for heating, so that we could use the gas output to just simply heat in existing burners. And I found that tidbit of information out from Bob yesterday, that by mixing it with additional air,
any inert gas. Other inventors have used exhaust gas from engines to do this. You can bubble the gas through a hydrocarbon to alter the chemistry of the gas. Unfortunately, that's limited. When you do bubble that through the hydrocarbon, eventually the hydrocarbon loads up with and won't absorb anymore, and you end up with ineffective. So you have to actually consume that hydrocarbon in something and then change it out.
But
you know.
Yeah. Anyhow, I'm sorry, James. And we always get off. Bob and I get off on these tangents very quickly on things. So I apologize ahead of
time. Well, and I don't think they're tangents. They're all relative to
they,
our.
They make it so it works for us. But the point of it was, we have one out that's been out for a couple of years. It's been tested up in the Pennsylvania area. He was matter of fact, it was one of our electric models. He had a gas furnace, was using that. I believe, and I'll double-check my numbers, he was at about $1,500 a season for his gas, and he went to $200 a season in cost for electric. So it is a significant savings, and it's one that if you wanted to go further and have a bank of batteries as a backup, even if you have a power outage, you still have heating for your house.
Right.
So,
well, another thing is that we've all been made poorer by the increased cost of energy.
Uh-huh.
And although the price of gasoline is now going down, or had gone down, the price of natural gas is going up this winter. They announced that it would be up 17%, and it had already tripled in price over the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of elderly folks and people on relatively fixed or low incomes have a real hard time during the winter in the northern part of the U.S. and in other countries as well, paying these high prices to heat their home.
I agree.
And it's like going to a movie and having to pay, you know, $4 for a drink or something. That's not what you should be treated like by the utility companies to heat your home, you know? So
I think there's actually another way of doing this more cost effectively than just generating the hydroxy gas directly from the grid power and using that to run a heater. You can actually generate your hydroxy gas from grid power, use that to run a natural gas-built generator, use the generator to supplement electrical consumption, and then use waste heat from that generator to heat your home.
Interesting, yeah.
Because you could take all the waste heat from the cooling system and run the exhaust through a heat exchanger and use that heat for heating a home and capture almost all of the energy available. And because people want to argue that you don't get something for nothing, the BTU content of hydroxy gas is lower than that of these other fuels like natural gas or propane, they don't understand the combustion concept behind hydroxy gas-fueled engines. It's a phase change issue, not a BTU issue. The engine's driven by phase change when it's running on hydroxy gas, it's not just a pure BTU heat engine.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
We once again, it's a matter of focusing on what we can do as quickly as possible for interim steps, because our economy and our culture is not going to let us go from Stone Age to the Jetsons in 20 minutes. There's too much mechanism involved. But in the meantime, we'd certainly like to get something in between that we don't have to keep banging on these rocks to get our cars around. It's either that or we're going to look like Fred Flintstone with our feet below. So one of the reasons that, and Bob has been very tolerant of me, and thankfully so, in getting this out there, I know that our efficiency is not as perfect as he would like it, but I know it is certainly acceptable to a standard that is way above, let me back up, I don't like to sound negative, it is significantly higher than what's currently available on the market. And that's our goal, get it out there, quality product, quick, and don't have anybody complain about it. And then down the road, as we are continuing on this project, and as we've discussed later, and it's not open for open discussion at this point, we are going further, much further down the road, to take all the existing cells that we will have on the road and do additional projects with them. So thankfully, many great things to come down the road.
And isn't it nice to be part of a company plan that is so positive with regard to, the atmosphere and the oceans, the rivers, the creeks, and so on. Everything is so interconnected with our exhaust pipe of our vehicle or the flue of our home heating furnace. And, you know, we think, well, I've got a 97% efficient natural gas furnace. But as Ruggiero Santilli points out, natural gas is not a clean burning fuel.
No. And, you know, the irony of this is, and we shared yesterday in our conversation, that my wife and myself had just gone down to New Zealand on a trip that was supposed to be a relaxational vacation that ended up turning into quite a business venture and something very important. The Wataha Nation of New Zealand, which is one of the government entities down there, signed up as the exclusive distributor for the cell down in the entire country of New Zealand. And you know what their reasoning was?
What's that?
10% of it was for gas economy or diesel economy. The 90% was because of what it did for the environment. That is the most environmentally conscientious country I've ever seen. It was just phenomenal. And it is inherent in the young people as well as the old, the respect for the country and the environment. They have a phenomenal handle on how to keep their beauty and the nature pristine down there.
Well, that's worthy of imitation, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. I would pray that we could imitate it up here, only a tenth as well as they've done down there.
Well, and perhaps we feel that since our land area is so large, we have the luxury of being able to dump pollutants without any kind of payback.
Unfortunately, I would tend to agree.
That's the general attitude. But there is a cost, and when you dump it in the environment, it does come back to bite you or your children or grandchildren later. And that's also another point with this technology, is it does improve the combustion efficiency of internal combustion engines and causes the emissions to be so much cleaner. When you totally burn the hydrocarbons, you end up with no unburned hydrocarbons and no carbon monoxide emissions from an internal combustion engine. We have analyzers here that we actually put on the vehicles and check the emissions, and that's how we tune them. We tune for the deletion of the emissions. You know, we get rid of the emissions. You can't do that with a lot of the boosters because they don't put out enough gas to do that. They don't put up enough hydroxy gas to fully boost an engine to get rid of all of the unburned hydrocarbons.
So the question is, if it was so simple for you to produce a unit, not to say that the cell, obviously you've gone to great lengths to produce an excellent unit there, but as far as a person producing a series cell, they don't have to go to those lengths to prove that exhaust emissions can be cleaned up by the addition of hydroxy gas to the intake.
Oh, yeah. Actually,
so you wonder, why is the media in this country continuing to pretend that a hydrogen booster serves no purpose? There have been articles recently that have come out in some of the magazines like, I don't know, Popular Mechanics or some of the other car-related magazines that have implied that there's no point in this. And I think the official stand of even the EPA or something is that nothing you put under your hood is going to help.
Well, it's interesting because we're very open. At this point, we're obviously very open on this subject. There are significant quantities of people that are aware of this. And, you know, the irony of it is we don't have any TV crews outside the front of our building, which you couldn't miss if you had to. And it's right on the main road, you know, one of those type of deals. So I have to agree wholeheartedly that until CNN shows up outside, I don't think we're going to have a conviction of the people involved.
But I think the problem is much deeper than even as we're discussing this. For instance, suppose CNN showed up today, and
uh-huh.
tonight on CNN this story was there. They wouldn't continue the story tomorrow and the next day, even though they continue to cover, like for instance right now in the news this morning, how many trillions of tons of ice have melted over the last couple of years.
Yep, yep.
You see, this story needs to be repeated daily until the public is so fully aware of it that everyone is saying, okay, where's the device coming out on new vehicles?
Well,
you know,
that's why, as you see, on as crude as it is, YouTube, but effective, you see that we've released, you know, one video a week here and upcoming, and I don't think we're going to keep up that pace, but as things develop and things continue to develop, we aren't going away. How's that?
That's nice to hear.
So,
well, in view of this movie that was released Friday, a remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still, and the message has changed from one of the aliens not wanting humans to produce nuclear weapons and then take them into outer space, they've updated the message to be that humans don't deserve to live on this planet because they're destroying the suitability of the planet as a place for other wildlife to live, other flora and fauna.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in other words, the extraterrestrials appreciate the diversity of the web of life on this planet more than we do, and we're the big obstacle to this web of life continuing.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is raised as a result of this threat of destruction by an outside entity. Well, how can humans show that we are capable of changing, and that we are desirous of and capable of making changes so that we're not threatening everything that's breathing around us? And your device is a perfect example of something that a company can do that shows that they are on that page, that we realize there's an imminent threat not only to our survival as a species on this planet, but to every other living thing. In other words, if you kill the ocean, that's it. And we are killing the ocean. The evidence that's been in the news just this past week about coral reefs, I don't remember what the exact percentage is, but it's an alarming percentage of coral reefs on this planet that are either dead or dying.
Absolutely.
And if that's not the canary in the coal mine...
Uh-huh. It should be. It should be well published, and unfortunately, it's not. It is secondhand news. Part of this trip was we had to come back through Fiji, and so, you know, of course, if you go through Fiji, you have to at least take a one or two day break. And we did some reef diving, and even the natives there are saying, you know, look at this. This is not where it was 20 years ago or 15 years ago. And their explanation is, well, we don't know. Well, that's not good enough.
Actually, our tailpipe is directly related to the Fiji reef conditions.
Unfortunately, you're correct.
Okay, and so the cell, even though I'm looking at your webpage at thecell.cc, and, you know, it's just a little blue box. It doesn't look like it could have all that much of a major impact on the world's oceans. But the truth is that if every vehicle on Earth had the cell under the hood, there would be a noticeable reduction in greenhouse gases in the atmosphere.
Well, you know, there is a reason my wife picked the color blue. It was the water.
Oh, yeah, well, that's appropriate.
And
I thought that was the cheapest resin you could get or something.
Oh, no, I can promise you it wasn't.
Recycled barrels or something, huh?
Well, and that's the other part about this, too. Her task to us was whatever you build, whenever it's done, and we expect the life expectancy to be well in past 5 years, she wants it all recyclable. And I said, well, sweetheart, you know, I come on, give me a break here. You know, how about we just invent a process and then go from there? No, you're going to make it recyclable. So, by God, over 50% of this thing's recyclable.
And then when you talk about life expectancy, you're talking about the plates eventually corroding or the plastic degenerating, or what exactly is
the... We have accelerated testing, age testing on this.
Mm-hmm.
It's currently at 5 years and not done.
So it could be much more than that, but that's
could
what
be
you're...
significantly more, but I'm conservative in that respect. It's warrantied for 2 years, complete, doesn't matter, whatever. And the rest of it, we're continuing to test. What's our limit? You should see Bob and I out there sometime after all the people are gone. We've upgraded. If you look at the YouTube video, you see there's a bench with a big Lexan square box. It's a safety box. It has a half-inch Lexan material on it for obvious oopses. And the question is, as he looks at me and I look at him, where can we really push this to? And we push things that we don't even bother putting them on YouTube, because YouTube, we can already get the negative connotations or comments back. Well, that's impossible. If they saw this, they just think we need to go to the loony bin. You know, we push it where wires start glowing.
Yeah. We take these things, we go to not just normal testing, we take it to destructive testing to see what it takes to make something fail. And then if it won't fail, then we have to see, well, what do we need to do to make it fail? And then when we do finally make something fail, then we take it over to a cell that's in the process of this testing. We'll take it over to the bandsaw and we'll cut it apart and look at it and see, now, what did that do to it? So,
and you know, the irony of that is people think, well, that's crazy. But, for instance, the last test we did, we have a seal on the top of the cell that will withstand 120 PSI, withstands all the temperatures you'd ever want, and it handles all the electrolyte without any question. It was a double seal. And my next comment to Bob was, well, wait a minute. What if we quadrupled the pressure? What if we doubled the flow? And what if the bolts were loose up top?
Well, we did that, and we put 125 amps.
On the small cell.
On the small cell, 125 amps. We pegged out the 20 liter per minute flow meter, of course. And
then we finally got a small seepage through one of the top bolts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we solved that. We fixed that. Now you can still do it.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, but that's the kind of testing that needs to be going on, and the limits reached and then pushed a little bit further each time, so that down the road, if someone were to unfortunately get in an accident on this thing, if I'm behind the cell, I'm probably going to be okay. The car is going to be hurt, but I'll be okay. That's the approach we take.
Well, yeah, it seems to be built much more stout than the average lead-acid battery that's in a car.
Oh, gracious, yes.
So that whatever happens to a battery in an accident, it looks like your cell will endure that a little better.
The compression testing on it was in excess of 26,000 pounds. And we do that on our hydraulic compression tester in the back.
And anyone who goes to your website, thecell.cc, can see, you have two videos posted on the site, YouTube videos, one of 30 liters per minute coming from your largest unit,
yes,
and 14 liters per minute coming from the smaller unit, which is, what, 8 inches by 8 inches by 3 3/4 or something?
Yeah, or 4 inches. It's 8 by 8 by about 4 inches wide.
Uh-huh.
And, so we figure we better start with the small unit, the 14 liter per minute. because as the very first comment, literally within 15 minutes after we posted it, at 1 a.m. in the morning on a Saturday morning, my son and I were up here, you know, while the Girl Scouts were camping.
Cell that small cannot put out 14 liters per minute.
Yeah, and the comment was, a cell that small cannot put out 14 liters a minute. Can you imagine what he'd say if we showed him what it really could put out?
Yeah, and by the way, what was the amp draw? And of course, that was at 12 volts, right?
That was at 24.
At 24 volts, okay.
24.
And yeah. What was the amp draw in order
and
to
put
out?
We actually need to correct the marker on that because I think he put on there 36 volts, and that's actually a 24 volt. And I was working the power supply, so I know what the voltage was at that time. And we had first put it on at 25 amps, then we put it up to 50 amps.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say 50 amps, that's not exact. Our power supply is current regulated. It actually put out like 53 and a half, something like that, amps into it.
At 24 volts.
At 24 volts.
And getting 14 liters per minute.
14 liters per minute out, yeah.
And then on the larger unit, the 30 liters per minute was at a higher voltage?
Yeah, we took that one actually up. We first initially tried it at 48 volts. These things are that particular unit's a three-voltage unit. It's a quad. So you can wire it in series parallel or parallel. So we ended up bringing it down to 24 volts, and we were actually running 24.76 volts at 206 amps during that greater than 30 liters per minute. I actually saw it get to 32 liters per minute on that one, and we had to end up shutting it down because we were essentially blowing the water out of the tank and blowing the water out of the bubbler at that point because there was so much gas flow, we were exceeding the capacity of our devices on the table.
And what about the temperature of the units as you were doing these tests?
That temperature went to 116 degrees during that test.
Which is quite low. We're talking 116 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's correct. And after we turned it off, it went up to 117 and then started coming back down again. So that test was actually running for only about a minute and a half, I would say, total. We didn't show the startup. We started it up at 25 amps. We always do these progressive. We started at a lower current and make sure there's no air in the system. Everything is gone through before we start the test. So we started it at 25, then after running it for about 30 seconds at 25, then I stepped it up to 50 and verified that everything was good, and then he got the camera ready, and then I went ahead and I kicked up the 350-amp power supplies. 350 amp power supplies to 150 amps, and then brought in the 225 amp power supplies to bring it to approximately 200. And our shunt, we've got a shunt in there, and we meter that, and was indicating 206 amps at that point. And he started shooting it before the production even had ramped up fully. And then I reached over and I turned one of the knobs down to show the other flow gauge shot up to the upper limit, which is somewhere in excess of 22 liters per minute because it's calibrated up to 20. And then I opened it back up, and then I reached back in and noticed that it wasn't balanced and reached over and balanced them so they read about the same.
Very good. Well, why don't we talk about what it is you're offering now? First of all, people can buy this directly from your company. Is that right?
That is correct, yes, sir.
Okay. Do you have any kind of sales distributorship yet established anywhere? Or?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we do. We currently have Brother Andrew at
Hydrogen Garage.
Garage.
Okay, so he's on the West Coast.
He's on the West Coast, that's correct.
The Central California coast.
Yep. We also have a couple of his affiliates that are with him. In addition to that, we have a sales force in the Carolinas area. He is definitively out there. He has three salesmen that are going face-to-face some of the larger trucking areas. We have our partner in Texas, in Waco, Texas, that is he's working on small little companies like UPS and FedEx that want this system, and we've been putting them off. And then in the Northeast, we have a gentleman by the name of John that is really, really working at it. He has got a couple of installers going up there, distributors that want to be part of this, boat people that at the marinas that want to be part of this. It is growing. This is after a week of release now.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah, we are thankfully geared up to it, because the one lesson that we did learn, one lesson that we studied prior to all this, and the reason we had such, and I hate to use the term secrecy, but the closed mouth prior to the release, was we did not want to be in the same boat that unfortunately has happened before. Oh, we're going to release this, we're going to release this, and never came to fruition.
Right.
We literally had a couple of hundred cells in stock on the shelf, produced, ready for shipment prior to the release.
Now, that's very intelligent of you to have anticipated, you know, the demand, for one thing, because especially as gas prices were so high over the last year, people producing even inferior boosters were so overwhelmed with orders that they couldn't keep up with them.
Yeah, and we've seen that, and we tried to address that by having this prepped and ready. We have the automation capability, obviously, as we build automation here, to integrate it into this system even more effectively and ramp up very quickly. It helps when you have your own manufacturing facility to manufacture the automation in-house. So we can ramp up as quickly as needed, and from what we've seen in the past week and especially in the past 3 days, it looks like it's going to need to ramp up relatively quickly before the first of the year.
So at this point, you're offering two products. Is that right, or are there more than two?
There are two products, and what it works out is, if you take that 14 liter per minute demo, as you've seen on YouTube, and you have that as a single, you can put those in series, or parallel, excuse me, and run them.
In other words, run two of them side by side?
Exactly, because let's say you might not have enough space for one of the larger units. And that was the biggest holdup was, let's see, we've got to be able to put this in vehicles. Everything from the Mustang, I mean, where are you going to put it in the engine compartment there? To things like the Ford F-150 that you see on our site. We went out and bought a brand new 08 Ford F-150 so that, one, people would see that, wait a minute, this isn't just an old junker test vehicle. This is the real McCoy. Put it on there and was able to achieve phenomenal results. And
what were those results exactly?
Well, we off the showroom floor, and as my wife has told me, my driving is less than conservative. We were getting real numbers, 13.4 miles to the gallon. That's it. That's what comes right off the showroom floor. So I drove that for about 1,000 miles while we continued to come up with the bracketry and the other systems needed to integrate into it. And right now, we are at 25 to 31 miles to a gallon.
Wow, so you doubled it, basically.
Exactly. And even with my driving and the, thankfully, additional capabilities it gives me when I put the hydroxy gas in, it's called acceleration. And poor Bob, he gets to sit in the right seat as we go to lunch every day. And sometimes he takes his hand and puts it over his eyes. And
I usually grab hold of the little handle hold onto.
Wonderful handle that he hangs onto.
So there was a noticeable change in the pep of the vehicle.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. I'm just ecstatic. And I'm used to driving my other vehicle, a BMW X5, which is known for having just that wonderful tad bit of acceleration. I'm trying to figure out how we're going to get that in there too.
Yeah, that's one side benefit of boosting with enough gas to actually make a difference to increase the combustion efficiency is, besides having better miles per gallon, you also, because you're burning the fuel more completely, you're getting all of the power available from that fuel. So, yeah, the engine power does come up. You get much better throttle response, and it makes a difference.
The trick of this one, James, is to have enough volume of the hydroxy gas, not half a liter a minute, okay? Not even 1 liter a minute. That's nice, don't get me wrong. But to have a larger volume, in a small engine, like the 5.4-liter, V8 that the Ford F-150 has, we're at 4 liters a minute, and I'm going to put another one on because, what can we do? Remember that theory we were going to test to see what the limit is?
Yeah. Right.
That's what we're going to do.
Now, what about the engine management system? Do you have one that you're recommending to be used in conjunction with the cell, or is that sort of, you're leaving that up to other manufacturers to come up with those products, or?
We have a couple of methods that we're doing on this. We're doing a two-pronged simultaneous approach. We have a gentleman that was, how do I put this delicately? If you've ever heard of Superchips, he was the man there. Okay, he invented the processor, and I could be mistaken there, but he is the person that really knows this stuff. He is one of this team, one of the group of this team, that has been able to achieve things that when we told him, we want to put a tune on this truck, we want to have the computer adjusted on this truck, he first approached it, like all the rest of the people out there, for tuning. Well, let's see, what do you want to look at? And when we finally explained how we're able to achieve what we're doing and said that, here's the direction Steve, and his name is Steve Medole, very, very bright man. How can we do this? And as we went further down the road, he says, well, I don't know what I'm looking at here, but, and then one day he walked in and he had this big beaming smile on his face and he said, we got it. And he'd come up with a different out-of-the-box thinking for how to put a tune on the vehicle. And that tune is something that we have come up with and we're giving to all our distributors on how to do it. And it is working phenomenally well.
So does this involve the use of like in many cases people are using a dashboard-mounted device. Some of them even have screens where you're able to monitor the functions going on.
It doesn't, and the reason is that's more complex than the average driver is going to want to get into. The average driver wants to put the key in the ignition, turn it on, and go.
Yeah.
And that's the approach we're taking. We do, however, and so what we've done is we've said, let us adjust the parameters that are needed and in the computer program that will still keep all the manufacturer's concepts and safeties and everything else involved. And let's adjust some of the fuel ratios and a few other things that are at this point proprietary and get them to a stage that, one, we're really increasing the mileage with the hydroxy, two, our gas output is in the 80 to 90% cleaner range. And, it's significant.
We're talking about exhaust gas.
I'm sorry, yes, thank you, Bob. The exhaust gas emissions are 80 to 90% cleaner. And so based on that, now we apply for, we have it for that one vehicle. Now we try and apply that technology from the Ford to the GMs or to the Chryslers or to the Toyotas.
Yeah.
And it is, I got to tell you, James, it is a challenge to get the manufacturers, it's worse than pulling teeth, to get the manufacturers to assist, and Toyota was the worst, and to get their data. to get the information to be able to produce controllers so that the average person doesn't have to have something on their dash, you know, monitoring all this goody, to be able to modify the parameters. And
so are you saying then that it's possible to do this without having to have an additional device, simply doing some reprogramming of the ECU itself?
That is correct at this time. We are working, however, because there are other factors involved, to have integration systems that you will plug in between your ECM, your electronic control module, the computer of the car, and the car, simply because we're fighting the car manufacturers. And when I say fighting them, listen, guys, we're, in comparison, well, I maybe not now today, you know, GM. I thought we were small potatoes compared to GM, but maybe not anymore.
You have more assets than they do.
And right now, we do. I'm pretty sure of that. But when it comes to trying to get, you know, somebody like Ford to say, hey, guys, here's a system. Here we go. You have a lot more capabilities. You have more insight into your system, theoretically. How would you like to help? That request has been put forth at least on my behalf a dozen, maybe 14 times. And you know what? I've gotten a zero response. So it is a bit more of a challenge in that respect. So we're trying to do it so that we can keep it so the individual that's running their car does not have to do anything except continue to put that key in the ignition.
Now, we did notice with the Ford, the F-150, that even without doing any reprogramming on the factory system, just doing the install of the cell and adding our management system that adjusted the rate of flow based on engine demand, that particular vehicle gave us a nice fuel improvement right off the bat without
any further. And you're speaking of just a throttle position sensor type.
Yes, the controller that takes the throttle position sensor signal and uses that to control the rate of flow of hydroxy gas for the engine.
So you're controlling the voltage going to the cell, is that it?
We're controlling the current, which controls the voltage, yes.
And that's alone enough, not having to intercept the oxygen sensor signal and so on.
Yeah, we didn't. We tried intercepting the signals. We actually tried an EIFE type device, and the computer would compensate for it every time. You know, you would make the changes, and the computer would just compensate for it. We found that we could just get the improvement without that.
By strictly regulating the amount of gas going in, so that the computer doesn't detect the extra oxygen and so on.
Yeah, exactly. Lean it out at idle and give it the higher gas at that speed. But we did get a greater improvement when we made the changes to the computer system.
Okay. And what about the cost of the cell? Is there a recommended list price that both the units have? Or?
Yeah, the basic unit, which, by the way, includes all the accessories, in other words, the pumping, the relays, the wiring, the tubing, the special one, because it's all high quality. We didn't want to just throw out whatever and hope that they got the best stuff.
So you are including accessories with the cell then?
Oh, yes, everything.
Yeah.
A tank, the whole nine yards. That's at $2,200 for the basic unit. And then it goes up to, for the trucking cell, and I have it posted. And Bob shared this with me yesterday as one of our large fleet owners called up and said, by the way, I want to get what you have on your site at $3,500 for the trucks. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I'm pretty sure that's at $4,400. He said, no, I'm looking at the site. So I in all fairness to everyone, today is Tuesday. Until the end of the week, we're going to keep it at the $3,500, at which point it's going up to the right price.
Yeah, it was actually the $3,500 was supposed to be for the cell by itself, not the complete system.
So,
and you know what's funny? I'm not seeing any prices here at all.
That's a good thing.
It's in the PDF.
I don't know whether I'm on the right page or not. What particular page of your site has pricing?
It's under specification. No, excuse me. It's under Specifications, yeah.
And there's a PDF file.
And there's a PDF
file. Oh, I see. You have to open that file. Okay.
Yeah. I never said I was real good at websites, candidly, so I apologize.
Well, you can't be good at everything. Apparently, you're good at building the cell.
Well, we're certainly working at that.
That was enough.
Yeah, we have to do some corrections on the specifications anyways, because we're showing a multi-voltage, a dual voltage for the smaller unit, triple voltage for the larger unit, and we're only showing like one current, and you know, which voltage is that current at? That's not specified, so we need to go in and change that, because the current actually depends upon how it's wired. That larger unit is actually good for up to 200 amps at 12 volts, 100 amps at 24 volts, and 50 amps at 48 volts. But at 48 volts, we're going to derate it down to 25 amps because when you run that cell 48 volts, in order to get to that high voltage, you have to compromise on the leakage currents. And because of the additional heating from the leakage currents, we have to actually derate the cell at that point. But we're able to keep the leakage currents at bay for the 24 and 12 volt options for that. We thought about dropping the 48 volt option altogether, but thought, well, we would just keep it, but at a greatly derated production rate.
Once again, conservative is always easier than overselling.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's good to see that you're of that mindset. A lot of the other competitors are not of that mindset, and their claims are greatly in excess of what...
We've actually run these units at much greater than rating, and without failure. We're just we're being conservative in our ratings.
Okay, so are you looking for additional distributors then?
We are, let's put it this way. We have the sales force going out specifically after distributors. We have, when I say distributors, that are qualified, that have the resources to install it to the spec that we want, and that have the moral turpitude to do it correctly.
Okay, so you are looking for distributors who have a shop, in other words.
That is correct, yes.
Who are capable of installation.
That is correct. And
but you're also going after the large fleet, so are you interested in having some representation along that line as well?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Well, it sounds like this is an excellent opportunity for someone who already has a shop or a chain of shops to be able to offer such a quality product.
Well, we believe so, and we feel so, and we appreciate the opportunities that they present as well for us, because the more, it's like the development of the whole system itself. It was not just from us. It was a combination of our partners and our friends and the group that came up with these ideas. There is no one sole person in this group that you can attribute all these ideas to. It is such a beautiful group that thankfully it got put together.
And so maybe we can talk a little bit about that group, because I'm sure this is of historic importance. So you're saying that there is a group of collaborators who contributed to this, the knowledge pool that resulted in the development of this product?
That is correct, significantly.
And without monetary compensation?
No, that's correct, too.
Well, that's a significant thing. I mean, when you talk about people who generally ask, well, what does it pay, you know?
Well,
and for them to chip in to this effort.
You know, you're right, because I've got to tell you. Now, obviously, there's a corporation that we started with remuneration from that corporation if anything developed from it. And that's just a simple business practice. Prior to anything coming out of it for the quite long period of time, and in business terms, it's like dog years. You know, 2 years is a long time in business terms. There was zero going out of it, just an awful lot going into it. And this group that was part of it, Bob Boyce, who is sitting across from me, is of course one of the key factors of that as well. The other one is doesn't mind not being a silent partner, Tom Kaler. He's out in Waco, Texas. And he is a significant factor in the business generation end of this and in the material components, especially the material that goes into the cell. He and his son, they both have the same drive that we do down here. As my wife says, when he comes into town, we fly him into town because we go back and forth quite a bit. She says, "Well, I guess I'll see you next week." And, you know, we're right up the street.
Yeah.
The hours that we have worked start at 6 a.m. in the morning, literally, and go to 2 a.m. in the morning. And that's what it takes to do something like this.
Well, apparently in such a relatively short time from the standpoint of bringing a product to market, you really have worked hard to achieve that.
Obviously, well, yes, sir.
But burn some midnight oil.
You're right, but and thank you. The other party in the Northeast does want to remain a little bit more recluse. John is his first name. But he is one of those that would rather just stand behind the sidelines and make it happen. And he does an extremely good job. I am very thankful for him as well. He has been able to get metals, particular metals that are required for this, at very good pricing, efficiently. Processing, added input for marketing, and jumps through hoops to get things accomplished in how would you do this for manual writing, or how would you do this for installation on this car or vehicle. Of course, Bob's sitting across from me again, and without him, I can promise you, it would have just died. And then, of course, Steve Madole, who is the programming end of this. Steve is our backup when it comes to how do we make that car really do what we want it to do, and does one heck of a job at it. So,
well, it's very encouraging to see the emergence of such a device as this. It's obviously a quality product, capable of putting out more than anything else in its class, and reliably so. Obviously, it's not going to be something that's going to, in fact, your the name of your company, Pre-Melt, applies to some of your competition. They melt long before they should. you might need to change the name of your company.
I would
get away from that.
Think of the positives.
Or maybe it could be understood. I mean, you've already done the pre-melting, so they don't have to. Huh?
Yes, well. We'll leave it in your hands. How's that?
Yeah. Well, our 15-minute interview has stretched over an hour, so I'll let you guys get back to work.
Thank you so much, James.
But it's been very nice. It's very encouraging to see an altruistic effort such as the two of you and your associates who've dedicated yourselves to bringing to market something that's worthy of any vehicle on the road, be it a passenger car or a big rig. And then you even mentioned yesterday that some of the ships, large ships and so on, are being outfitted with several of these larger sized units.
Yes, sir.
So that's encouraging to know. Factories and power plants, there's a lot of applications for a hydroxy generator that's efficient, capable of large gas output, which you all, as you say on your website, are the first to, let's see, where is that about? It comes under, on your homepage, the first manufacturer in the United States to be able to mass produce a series cell.
That is correct, yes, sir.
So I congratulate you for your accomplishments, and perhaps we can do a follow-up interview in the coming weeks and see how things are going as far as distribution and what's being accomplished.
We look forward to it.
Well, my hat's off to you, and hope you have a good day.
Thank you. You too, James.
All right,
have a
care.
Good day, James.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.